Hey everyone, it's Billy Morrison and Ozzy Osbourne here. Our new show, The Madhouse Chronicles, is dropping this April. Join us as we watch and react to the maddest internet clips. What do we discuss, Ozzy?
Drugs, rock and roll, aliens, all that kind of shit.
Drugs, rock and roll, aliens, and all that kinds of shit. Visit osbournemediahouse.com for early access. What do you say? Do you think it's the wildest show on the internet?
Oh,
you're in the madhouse now.
Today's episode is brought to you by Vesta Movement. Their instructors set the tone for high energy, ass kicking, and constantly changing workouts that challenge all muscle groups by incorporating both cardio and strength training. People of all levels of fitness will fall in love with their new approach to kickboxing classes. They've got the hottest playlists, the most encouraging trainers, and an awesome tight-knit community. They're here to change the fitness game in the ATL. I went down for my first class the other day and loved it. Alex and Missy and their team, they'll kick your ass. They'll take great care of you. It's badass trap music. It's an awesome, awesome way to get in shape. You can check out the website for more at VestaATL.com. They're located at 774 Ponce, which is next to the local, across from Dugan's, and catty corner to, you know what, the Claremont Lounge. Go down there, check them out in person, or hit them up on the web. That's VestaATL.com. Welcome back to the Atlanta Podcast. I am your host, Matt B. Davis. It is a beautiful Tuesday in mid-March. Will it ever become really green? Really green. Will it ever become really warm? Fucking freezing in these mornings, man. I hate to be the same, like, broken record about this weather business, but it's just kind of like talking about what's happening now. And what's happening now is it's cold. I like recording my interviews outside. I like to record my intros and outros outside. And right now, I'm in one of the many Alkaloid conference rooms that you've heard so much about here in the Beltline. Shout out for Alkaloid, not an official sponsor of the show, but the home of this podcast this last 6 months and maybe the immediate future, as this is where I bring guests and this is where I record my stuff and this is where I do my magic. On today's program, Anna David. Now, as I mentioned to you previously, this episode is coming to you from Los Angeles, where I was a couple of weeks ago. Why do the Atlanta podcast in Los Angeles? Well, because this show is about me talking to people I think you will enjoy listening to. And so if they come through town, great. If they're not in this town, but I go visit them, that works too. It's because we can't call the show Matt Talks to People About Stuff. So we'll leave the title as the Atlanta Podcast. Having said that, let's talk about Anna. Anna, I've known for a super long time, as we talk about. I got sober in the fall of 99, and she got sober shortly there afterwards. Now, for those of you that know, these are anonymous programs, which means I don't out anybody and they don't out me. But if I'm willing to talk about it and they're willing to talk about it, then that's what happens. So here's how this interview with Anna came up, because she's not someone, you know, I believe in transparency, she's not someone I talk to on a regular basis. What happened was, I knew this trip to LA was coming up, and LinkedIn and Facebook are great for, like, who do I know in X town that I'm visiting? And I've done that from time to time, and Anna's name popped up. Actually, it popped up the last time I went last year, and it didn't work out. So this time around, I said, let's make it happen. So I did. And she's someone who's had a pretty fascinating career that I thought you all might be interested in. As we get into, she started out as a writer, and that turned into television appearances, and now she's gone on to teach writing. We're talking real deal writer, by the way, not just like somebody hawking their books on Amazon, because anybody can do that these days. Real deal, bestsellers, Harper's, I forgot who you're published through, but real deal writer, real deal television appearances. And you can Google her right now and find a ton of shit on her. And this show is about getting past all the stuff you can Google about someone and getting to actually know them. I think I've done a pretty horrible job introducing her, so let's just get to it. Okay, Anna, David, and I, not that long ago, Hollywood, California, away we go. But seriously, you've been on television a lot.
I have.
And don't they put one of these on you?
Yes, but were we not just talking about how you could do something for a really long time and still be horrible?
No, exactly.
At the technology?
So yes. So Bert, by the way, first of all, for years, and this is what I tell the podcasters of the world, they're like, oh, you've been doing a podcast a long time. I started with, I call it Radio Shack. It wasn't Radio Shack, but this little thin thing. This is before phones did it. And I would just put it there and it worked pretty good.
I had that tape recorder too.
Then I got the XLR mics, but people mess with it. So I just got these and I realized it's not only does it make less noise, but people forget it even more.
Yeah.
Like, oh, we're just talking.
Yeah.
There's nothing physically in the way, so I really like this. So
I do
check the levels, and I check the batteries constantly.
Me too, same.
This thing runs, I plug these in, and I was like, this doesn't work, in a podcasting group.
Yeah.
And they're like, yeah, it's something called phantom power. So you do that, but then it sucks the shit out of the battery. So I'm going to get another thing, which is like a battery, blah, blah, blah. So
I don't know what phantom power is.
Exactly, neither did I. It powers this. Because this itself doesn't have any power. So now you're running it off the batteries of this.
Of course you are. Why would a mic have power?
But I just plugged it in thinking it would work, but you have to change the setting on here.
I want to know so much. I might make you look at my equipment afterwards. When you say podcasting group, do you mean that podcasting paradise?
No. I'm sure there's 20,000 of them.
That's the big one.
I'm in a local one and a not so local one. And I find I can't read it unless I have a technical question.
Yeah.
Because it just makes me angry. Because you see all the shows and you're like, oh my God, that's just like.
But yours is more successful. So doesn't that make you feel good? Is that not true?
Yes and no. But it's also like I've seen people, hey, I just bought $1,000 worth of equipment and I'm really excited. And what do you guys think I should talk about?
And that makes you mad? Does
that
make you go, you're kind of a stupid person?
It just makes me go, you know what I mean?
That wouldn't make me mad. I mean, everything makes me mad, so it's notable that would not make me mad at all.
Okay, so let's go right into the good stuff then, right? So what defect is that when you say everything makes you mad? Like resentful?
Anger?
Is it resentment? Do you have resentment?
I think irritation. I think that's being irritable is my number one defect.
Okay, do you, if someone gets successful that you don't like, do you get angry?
Yeah, it's a big topic for me today, specifically. Okay, and the reason I say it's a big topic is yes, that was the case, and now I feel like I have some stuff working out that I've been struggling to make work out for a long time, and I'm experiencing that hostility from some people in my life. And yesterday, at a party, somebody told me there's a word, a German word for the opposite.
Schadenfreude, you didn't know this?
The opposite of Schadenfreude, which is when you are, so yes, we can get off on other people's misery, but that really... Really, what's upsetting is when the people close to us have success. It's like the inverse. He told me. We could Google it.
So that's not... So you're saying people have been misnomering Schadenfreude this whole time.
No. It's that Schadenfreude means basically you're happy when someone fails.
Right.
The inverse is you're unhappy when they have success.
Okay.
And it's a different German word.
But can I tell you that when I hear you say that, I have literally gone to a website of a person or company that I didn't like and laughed when it says, you know, when it, like a website's gone. So I know it's a real thing.
It's a real thing.
Like
hate following. That wouldn't be an expression.
Here's the hate following. My friend, we talked about this podcast we're talking about. He's like, sometimes I just hate listen to her. I'm like, I can't even hate listen to her. I hate her so much. If somebody's bad and you just like.
I can't do that either. I don't hate follow or hate listen because I'm just too irritable. But I think the thing about other people's success is a complicated, very, very complicated thing. I remember how I told you, I'm just going to talk about this. I was going through it today. What brought it about is I'm giving a TEDx talk. I'm giving four, but my first one is next weekend in the Bay Area where my family's from.
That's great.
And they're not coming.
Because
they're... it has nothing to do with them not loving me. It has everything to do with the fact that when I do something that is successful, it highlights to them they're not doing
it. I want to cry right now.
It's pretty sad.
Well, as a person, I want to cry, and because I'm a parent, so it's like you have this whole new dynamic when you have kids. That's like a whole weird. Which, by the way, I don't know if you ever plan on having kids or not.
Yeah,
but
I do.
All the work that I had done on forgiving my parents Then children were born to me.
Yeah.
And I was more horrified at what they did, and I hated them all over again.
Because people always say the opposite. They say, like, oh, and then you're going to have so much sympathy for what they
you
went through.
You do have some of that, but it's more like, I would never fucking do that to my kid.
I know. But we were also raised at a different time.
No, let's not even go there. So I want to back up a little bit.
Yeah, go
right? Because there's a lot to cover.
Yeah.
Right? So, and it's great because I don't have to ask you if it's okay to talk about recovery because it's what you do.
Yeah.
Because some people, it's weird.
Yeah, I know.
So when I knew you, right? Mm-hmm. So we learned recently that I got sober like 6 months before you or maybe a year, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So when I knew you at the time and we were over to the little log cabin thing, what were you doing in the world?
We weren't at the log cabin. We were at the Bliss. Oh, did we meet each other first at the log cabin?
I'm just guessing. That's where I went. Like, I feel like that's where I went my first 5 years.
No, but I know you from Bliss. Like, I know you well from Bliss. No? You think, because do you, in your mind, am I a log cabin person or a Bliss person?
I think I just the cabin because that whole, like I said, the first 5 years of mine is like locked in. And then the last, then the next 3 or 4 years were Bliss. I can't even know how long I'm sober now. Like, then it was Bliss all the way. Which, by the way, I want to say for our listeners, and they may or may not get this. Those who are in the program will get it. But those that aren't, doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
That the Bliss 10 a.m. meeting is the amazing example of Los Angeles sobriety because nowhere else in the country can you have a 10 a.m. meeting.
Such a good point.
Because nobody has a job. You can have a 7 or 8 a.m. and at noon, nobody has a 10 a.m.
Right. 10 a.m. mob. Do you remember we would have to stand back with
Well, in the early days.
I know.
I'm going to swing by the way. Is he there?
I don't know. But you know that meeting is crazy now. And awful.
Oh, like bad?
How could no one have told you?
I haven't been here in years.
I understand, but I'm 2 blocks away. I would never go there, ever.
So, too many newcomers or too much glam? Like,
no.
There's a lot of different ways menus can be bad.
Yeah. No. It's full of insane people. Like, truly insane people.
Oh, like it started attracting, like, the homeless types?
Yeah, but we don't need to be like that. But yeah, maybe. Maybe.
Okay. So, what were you doing in the world? In 1999/2000.
In 2000, 1999, I was doing lots of cocaine.
Were you in this apartment?
No, I was living on Sweetser Avenue.
Okay.
And has not everybody lived on Sweetser Avenue or dated somebody who's lived on Sweetser?
I dated someone on Sweetser.
Always.
As soon as you said having somebody live there, I almost said I dated someone on Sweetser.
Sycamore is the other one. Everybody. Like, or your friend lived on Sycamore. Like,
200 South Sycamore.
Do you know what I'm saying?
It's the last place I lived.
It's so true. There's no other streets like that.
It's so weird. I've never thought of that. This is an awesome LA thing.
Yeah. Super interesting to people in Atlanta. So
we go far. We'll talk about that later. Go ahead.
I'm sure you do. So I lived on Sweetser. And I was really just bottoming out for years and years and years, like not doing anything.
But what were you trying to do?
I was trying to be a screenwriter and a television writer.
Not an actress.
Never an actress.
Even though you are...
talent-free in acting.
Not horrible to look at?
That's so sweet of you. That's nice.
I'm trying not to be sexist.
Yeah.
Because most would assume a woman moves to Hollywood and is young-ish, like she wants to be.
Never.
Like guys, like the ugly guy becomes the writer, but the woman becomes the...
That's very kind of you, but no. I also always wanted to write. Like, I was always into writing. So, and I knew that it would be a struggle, and I also understood that acting would provide even more rejection than writing. So I'm fragile. Why would I want to pursue something that would, you know, give me so much rejection? I honestly never wanted to. It's kind of weird. Never wanted to. So I was screenwriting, by which I mean I was sitting in front of a computer with this little kitty sitting there.
The same one.
Yeah. Yeah. She's 18.
And has very little time left in this earth.
Don't say that. Did you know this morning, I told you I was going through it, I was like looking up something online, I ran across someone that was a pet grief counselor, and I was like, if there's a profession that helps you deal with the passing of a pet, all I said to myself was, I'm never going to be okay again if she dies. And she will. First of all, she's going to live till 24. I've already decided.
That's the magical number. What is this cat's name?
Lily.
And it's a boy or a girl?
Lily?
A girl?
Yeah. Do you think she looks old at all?
No, I wouldn't have guessed that.
No.
But I'm also not a pet person. The people I had breakfast with today could not stop talking about the fucking dogs that kept going by.
That's super annoying.
Of course it is.
Yeah.
Like, I have kids, but I wouldn't do that with every baby. I mean, if there's a little baby sitting next to you, sure. Anyway.
Yeah, I know. It's so dumb, people and their dogs. It's so bad.
It's a thing.
Yeah. So I was sitting in front of a computer trying to work on the screenplay, but instead I was so high that I would just sit, you know. Did you do cocaine?
No.
Okay, so
My wife did a fair amount.
She's sober as long as you?
Yeah, Stacey, yeah.
Yeah.
You probably know her.
No, but I have the weirdest memory something you shared related to her. It's very positive. And but that, it might be too much to say on the podcast.
You can say it, and if I don't like it, I'll cut it
out. Okay, because I think of it often.
Okay, I'm really curious what this is.
Yeah. So for a very long time, I was like, if only I have the relationship,
right,
then I will be fine.
Right.
I will be happy forever.
Right.
And now I have it. And I still have my feelings and my issues. And I will never forget. It was a bliss meeting. It was the most brilliant chair. You were like, oh my God. I was sitting. I bought a brand new TV. And you talked about how big it was. And you're like, I was sitting in front of it with the woman I knew I wanted to spend the rest of my life with. And I was like, I'm still not fixed. It was freaking genius. You have no memory of it. It was definitely you.
No, I'm just kind of like, this is like freaking me out a little bit.
It, yeah.
Like in a good way. Like I want to cry now because like.
But that really, I mean, it stuck with me because I think I knew when I was always telling myself, oh, if I just find love, I'm going to be happy for her. I knew I was lying to myself.
Right.
And I just remember being like, because I was probably like 8 years sober, being like, oh my God, he's telling the truth. I believe everything he's saying. I believe he knows that about that woman. And I believe that he bought this TV thinking it would fix him. Right. It was so intense. Yeah.
Well, I'm glad that that happened.
Yeah.
And again, like, you know, it's like, for me, that's like all God stuff, right? Like,
yeah.
That just, right? But it's interesting because when people always say that in the front of the room, like, if I just get the girl, if I just get this, it's like, I think we forget that, though, in the process. So, like,
yeah,
you getting a TEDx talk.
Yeah.
Right? You really want that. And it's only after you get it that you go, oh, shit, that didn't fix me either. It's not like you thought the TEDx talk was going to.
Right.
But in the pursuit of it.
Yeah.
That's, do you know what I'm saying?
1,000%. But that's what about your share was that you weren't saying it past tense. It had just happened. And that's why I've heard thousands of people say that.
Right.
But they weren't in the process of realizing it. It was so intense. It was really good.
My wife's going to cry when she hears this. So I'll make her listen to it now. Because she doesn't listen to all my episodes, because come on.
But like, that she didn't fix you? That's going to make her cry? Or just that you were sharing
I think that I said I want to spend the rest of my life with is the part that made me. Because it's like, because now we've been through the fucking shit in 14 years.
What does that mean?
Be with someone for 14 years. Tell me what you think. And have kids with them.
Why? What happens?
A lot.
Like you said, but good and bad.
Right.
Yeah, just like life.
Yeah, but 10 times more.
Why?
Are you asking me because you're curious,
mm-hmm.
or?
Mm-hmm.
I think because your life kind of does become like their life and not in a codependent way, but mm-hmm. in a kind of like we're on the same team way,
mm-hmm.
if you're doing it.
Sounds lovely.
Right. And so, like this, so I'm a big, if you don't have kids, and you want to get divorced, fine, no harm, no foul, go. If you do have kids, work that shit out. Unless one person is abusing the other or is using heroin, right? That's my feeling.
Right.
So when you hear the standard, I fell out of love, we're not in love anymore, we're just, it's like, yeah, if you think for a second being with someone more than a couple of years, you're not going to wake up and go, I hate that person.
Right.
I'm not sexually attracted to you anymore. If you really, like, do not, like, that is what fucking marriage is.
Right.
The whole point is to, like, figure that stuff out. And that's a lot of going through some shit.
Right. And so how do you figure it out?
Like you do everything else a day at a time.
Right. And do you? Have you?
Yes. I mean, we are still together. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
And here was a big myth, like, that I bought, that, like, you know, you have kids. I wish I could, like, capture the essence. Like, you're listening so hard mm-hmm. because, like, you want these things. You want marriage.
I always listen hard. No. I mean, if someone's being interesting, okay. Go on.
So, like, I have my first kid. You go to the park. And, like, oh, there's another dad with a kid. And, like, kind of strike up a conversation. And then it's like, oh, that didn't really, like, work out. Like, you're not, it doesn't, I still don't like most people, right?
Right, 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 right.
So, like, if she likes the wife, the husband is usually a douche, or vice versa.
Yeah.
So we don't have a lot of couples that we hang out with, this like big myth of couples. So the two close couples that we had in our life, both of the guys in the last year have gone out and they're getting divorced.
Yeah.
And like these were sober couples, people we hung out with.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like ugh, this is the only people that we liked even, like as a couple.
Right, right.
So anyway, it's rare to like, do you know happily married people here in Los Angeles?
Hold on, let me think. I don't know that many married people, but I will say my mom and my stepdad were together for 18 years and were blissfully happy, but they met later in life.
Okay.
You know, like blissfully for 18 years.
Okay, and so this brings me back. So them not coming to like, I don't know, I think of like if you were a musician or a comic and you had 1,000 gigs, they could skip a few or skip most of them. But like a TEDx talk seems like a big deal.
Yeah.
And when you say, can you come, they just go,
This is what I learned when I was doing the 10th step. Okay. It's so much more complicated. It didn't occur to me to tell my brother I was doing it until this morning.
Okay. So he's like, I already have plans.
I didn't also tell him directly. Like, this is the weird part.
So you're being passive aggressive?
It literally did not cross my mind that he and his my sister-in-law would want to come. And then I was texting them to say, I'm going to be up north. Can we hang out? And they said, great. He doesn't respond, but she responded. She was like, yeah, we could come over for dinner on Saturday night. And I thought the TEDx talk was on Friday. And I was like, great. And then I realized it was on Saturday. And I said, oh, I'm on at 6 for this TEDx thing. So I will probably not be there till late. How about Sunday? And she just wrote back and said, Ned is going to South by Southwest, which totally hurt me. Like, oh, he's so fabulous, blah, blah. Anyway, the point is, I never said, guess what? I'm doing this thing. It would mean a lot to me if you would come. With my mom, also terribly complicated. And I was worried that she would be unsupportive at the event and I would screw up as a result of that. Oh. Yeah.
You're like breaking my heart over here.
Why?
Because I have a little girl and just as like a person who has, I have my very complicated relationship with my parents.
Yeah.
First of all, are you Jewish?
Yeah.
Okay, I thought so.
Yeah. So.
Not because you look Jewish, because your last name is David.
Yeah, fair enough.
I'm pretty sure, by the way, that we were David somewhere too, because my last name is David.
I know, I was thinking about that.
But somewhere we were probably Davids.
Probably. We're brother and sister, that's sweet.
I have a sister named
Anna. And you would come, really? You would come to my TED Talk. I actually believe you would. If you were my brother.
Of course I would.
Yeah. So I didn't invite them. With my mom, I said, I'm going to do this. Here is the link to get the tickets. I could have bought her ticket. I bought a ticket for my friend who's coming with me.
You made a ticket for your mom? How many free ones do they give you?
They don't give you any.
Zero?
Yeah, it doesn't matter. The other ones they give you 4. This one they happen not to give you any.
Okay.
It doesn't matter. The point isn't the $20 ticket. The point is...
Oh, it's 20. I thought it was... Yeah, you could...
The point is I could have bought it for her. And I did not. This is my part. Because of my conflict about would she stress me out in the moment. So I said, here's the link. And I talked to her several times and she was like, will you send me the link? And I'm like, I already did. She's 77, you know, but she's very with it. I talked to her the other day and she said... I went to the link and it was sold out.
Oh.
But this is the part that kills me. So I called over and over again. And that's the part that kills me. Because it's like, if you'd wanted to go, like, you don't have to prove to me how much it means to you. Oh,
got it.
You know? But I think, like, as I dismantled this whole thing in this 10 step that I sent my sponsor, like, I never said this would mean so much to me. I can get her a ticket. So it's not like, and it has nothing to do with them not loving me. Totally love me. It's that supporting my career stuff reinforces their own insecurities. And that sucks. But it doesn't mean they don't love me. But it fucking sucks.
Do you do any Al-Anon?
Yeah, I have. I've done tons of work on this. I find a lot of freedom from the fact that they don't read anything I write. It gives me, it used to cause me tons of pain. And now it's like,
But again, like, that's different because you write a lot, so yeah. It'd be hard to read all your stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, I do a lot of talking, too. Not in their town.
Not in their town.
It's not in their town. It is, like, an hour away, to be fair.
Okay.
So do you feel sorry for me? A little bit?
I don't think that's the word.
What's the word?
It's just more, like I said, like, heartbreaking, just kind of, like, seeing... Just being able to see, like, both sides of it, and it's just hard to...
Are your parents supportive?
I mean, dude, we could talk forever about...
We can't, so I'm just asking you now. Are they supportive? It's complicated.
Yes.
Right. So you relate.
When I hit a certain age, my mother said, you know, we always knew you'd be blah, 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 blah. But in the meantime, it didn't. Like, I moved to Boston to do stand-up, right? And then here, right? Because that was my dream. And there was no, that's awesome. What can we do to help you? It's like, why are you leaving?
Right.
Like, that whole thing. But again, I want to back up to you.
Yeah.
Being on a lot of blow, petting your cat. Trying to write.
Trying to write. And so when you do a lot of
cocaine. You had your copy of, what's it called, Open?
What was my copy?
What does everybody write their script on?
Final draft.
Yes.
Yeah.
P.S. By the way, just connected with the guy on LinkedIn who fucking developed that.
Aren't you cool?
I just couldn't believe it. Like, yeah. Because he's in it. It was about a stupid obstacle thing we were talking about. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, what were you doing before? He's like, well, I developed Final Draft. I was like, what? Like,
I don't seem to think that's as cool as you do.
I just like every single desperate writer in Hollywood is like
He's probably got a lot of money.
Well, but I don't think he. Anyway.
Right. He got screwed over.
Okay, so you're trying to.
So I'm trying to write a screenplay. And the thing is, if you do a lot of cocaine, you get really like immobilized. And so literally I would sit there and I would go, okay, I got to pee, but I can't get up. That's just so hard. And so, and I had a computer that if you didn't hit a key within a minute, it would go, do you want to save? And there would just be like this.
Oh my God.
It's like beep. And when I was high, that beep sounded so loud and I lived in fear of the beep. So I would like sit there and be like, hit a key, make sure the beep. And I would always miss it. And then like I'd jump out of my skin and then 59 seconds later,
wow, it would happen again. Wow, this sounds like awesome. Drugs are cool.
Drugs are great. So fun. And so that's what I was doing. And then I was one of those people who got sober. And the minute I got sober, like career dreams just totally came true. I had always wanted to work at Premier Magazine. Always, always, always. In fact, I had interviewed to be an intern when I lived in New York after college, and I didn't get the internship. And I literally was out at a bar, but you know, sober, so like into AA and sober. And somebody introduced me to this guy, this gay guy. And he was like, I work at Premier. I go, oh, it's my dream to work at Premier. And he goes, we have an opening. I mean, which is crazy because there was a 4-person office and I got hired. It was crazy. I was like, this sober thing is amazing.
And what were you writing about?
I was a staff writer.
And so you're writing about?
So they hired me to do a column called Party Girl, which was then ended up being the name of my first book because it was very much based on the fact that they gave me this column and it was, you know, and I was super into celebrities and all that stuff then. And so it was this column where I would go to premieres and Oscars and all the award shows and interview celebrities and right. then like write this column about it.
Right.
So
back when you could write a column because there wasn't really blogs.
There was, back when people actually bought magazines. Premiere right. went under, you know.
No, I know, but I'm trying to make sure we set the stage properly.
We set the stage, that meant a lot.
Yes, huge. It's a big deal.
It was a big deal to write for magazines, and they paid you well. I mean, that job didn't pay well, but when you're freelance writing magazines, they paid you really well, and it was an amazing gig for a long time. So then I actually was fired, not fired, they hired me to like kind of, picking something out of my cat's eye, ignore me. They hired me to kind of, they wanted to make Premiere like really fun and glamorous and all of these things. And what they did is they didn't really explain that to the readers. And so I found out 6 months in, my work had, quote, alienated the core readership. And so the editor-in-chief was fired and I was his hire. So we were both let go like 6 months
into what was it before you got there?
What do you mean? It was very industry.
Oh, kind of boring. And you were like the fun young person yes. that's going to like make it happen.
Yeah, yeah. And they didn't, you know, the
so people were reading it like it was more like Variety or like what were they
thinking?
Yeah,
Premiere before Us Weekly and all that stuff existed. It was you could get information about celebrities, but it was written really well and it was journalism.
Got it.
Celebrity journalism, which doesn't exist anymore.
Right. It's just all crap.
Yeah. I mean, Vanity Fair sort of does it. New York Magazine does it.
Right.
But, I was so good and sober and surrendered that I remember the day that this is how I handled stuff then. I was just like, I was devastated. And then 5 minutes later, I was like, everything happens the way it's meant to. Acceptance is the answer to all my problems. I totally accept this. I'm going to assume it's for the best because that's what these people have been telling me.
Right.
And then, from there, I started writing because I believe that attitude, I started writing for every magazine I'd ever wanted to, and then I wrote books. And it was like, the truth is, if you do that, if you have that attitude, you will get what you want. If you do not have that attitude, and you go into self-pity and woe is me, you will not get what you want. It's very simple.
So why
do we not always have that attitude?
Yeah, why do we slip into desperation and fear and scarcity?
I don't know.
And Because Stacey, so we're, right, Stacey and I are both sober, right? And so, again, like, it's like a together, like, and we kind of can, like, we don't, like, I don't, we don't do each other's program, but we can, like, just sort of, like, help each other if one of us is being kind of too negative. I'm like, hey, do you want to do a gratitude list together? Do you want to do some, like, we can do that kind of stuff.
Right.
And so then, like, cool shit will happen. Daddy makes a bunch of money. And it's like, see, it's all going to be great. You know, we, like, and then, like, it builds upon itself, right? And the secret and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And then a few months later, it's like, we got to pay the rent in a couple days. And it's like the fear starts over. And
yep.
I mean, that's how it's been for me for 18 years.
I get in phases, though, that can last years. Truly. And I don't know why. I don't know, you know. And sometimes I have a hard time telling the difference between things going well and me being, like, super on the spiritual beam. Like, I can't tell the difference.
Really?
Yeah. Because I'm good. And I'm in acceptance, but maybe I'm in acceptance because I'm getting everything I want, you know?
Well, I can tell you that it has gotten, there are definitely times when there's no money in the bank and there's no, like, hey, the check's coming in a week from this one client going on, which used to flip me out completely. And I have been like, honey, I know something's going to come.
Yeah.
And, like, we have been able to do that.
Yeah.
And then it does. And that's way different than before. Before it was like, once you hit, like, the 27th and there wasn't enough rent money, it was time to freak out. And now I don't.
Right, and something,
guess what, always does come.
Always.
Right?
Yeah.
But you, again, you like you said that, because I know it's been a long time, but to go from writing for a magazine and then writing a book, were you a bestseller?
Later, not that book.
Okay.
Yeah.
But even just getting the book deal is pretty good, right?
It was, yes.
Right?
Yes, but I have super high expectations for my life, so that's great, and at the same time, it's like, well, of course. That's what I deserve. Do you know what I mean? It's a bizarre thing. Yeah. I mean, but I am a good writer and I wrote a good book and I had written for a lot of magazines. So I was lucky enough to have had agents contact me and say, do you want me?
And what are you really good at writing about?
I don't know anymore. I'm not that interested in writing anymore.
More interested in the talking.
I'm really passionate about online marketing. I love developing online courses. I love, you know, I basically the last year has been sort of building up an audience so that I'm hosting a retreat so I can sell out that retreat. So I can sell out, I have an accountability program where people pay $25 a month and they're in this group and I go in and I cheer them on. I have this coaching program where I take 10 writers at a time through the process of writing a book proposal. You know, I like the fact that I can, once you have an audience, you can kind of do what you want. Easier said than done. I want a bigger audience.
Right. You know, the 1,000 true fans.
Yeah,
thing,
exactly.
Right? I have 37, I think.
That's a lot. I have like 9.
No. But seriously, like that's, it's funny because when someone explained it to me, I was like, oh, like the people that no matter what I do, they'll buy it.
Yeah.
They'll shout it out.
They'll drive.
It might be 19 people, but you know what I'm saying? It's like, I know I'm pretty far from 1,000. You've definitely got more than 9 if you've got an online group that people will join.
I co-host it with somebody.
Okay.
And it's not huge.
Okay.
But
it's interesting. You use the word online marketing though, is like, I thought you meant like for other people. Like you just meant doing what you do, but through, I mean, because by the way, that is great because that's like the, what do you call it?
I don't know, you're chopping.
The blah, blah income.
Passive.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Because so my previous businesses, all I ever did, and I'm like a late in life entrepreneur.
Yeah.
Again, much longer story.
Same.
It was like, sell this thing, you give me money. Sell this thing, you give me money. And like now through what I do, there's like sometimes a little bit comes in and like, oh, I forgot about that thing. And it's like, you get a bunch of those and that's how people do it.
That's what I'm doing.
Right. And that's what people do with real estate and 10 other things. Right. Mm-hmm. So that's the move for sure to have these things.
And plus it's much more interesting. There's nothing I want to do all day long. I want to record a podcast, do a storytelling show, go into the coaching group. Like I want to do it all. I get bored otherwise.
Right. Yeah. Okay, but I still feel like we like ran over like so many things.
Mm-hmm.
So your first book is called Party Girl, mm-hmm. and is about?
It's about a wild and crazy girl who gets a job documenting her life right when she gets sober, and so she has to create a persona based on who she used to be. My column was not about me, it was about what celebrities had to say, but it was based on that idea, because I thought it was kind of hilarious that I had been this crazy party girl, and suddenly I get a column called Party Girl once I get sober.
Right. So the book is essentially is
my story. It's a memoir disguised as a novel.
And it's funny-ish?
Really funny.
Is it on Audible?
You know,
Read by the author? Because I'll get that.
I have other things on Audible, but that is not, no.
Because it's just too old and you didn't do it back then?
Back then, yeah, Audible, 3% of books sold the audio rights. And now, ever since Amazon bought Audible, almost everything is.
Right.
So I have Kindle singles that are on Audible.
Are they read by you?
Yes. Yes.
I will totally get that. Although I do listen at 1.5 speed. Do you do that?
No, I don't listen to Audible anymore. I only listen to marketing podcasts.
Do you listen at 1.5 times speed?
Mm-mm.
Okay.
Why? Is that better?
It's a time saver. An hour podcast you just listen to in 45 minutes.
I feel like there's so much information.
But you kind of just get used to the... Dude, there's a thing now. I found this out recently. People who want to consume a lot of books, because like to me, it's the enjoyable experience. But they go faster and faster. Yeah. So there are apps that are like 5, 6, 7 times. And I guess it's like speed reading. You kind of can tune into it.
There's people who teach that.
But 1.5 times for me is perfect. And I'm just kind of used to it. And I also like, I don't even bother like skipping the ads anymore because I just know they're going to be over that much faster.
Yeah, I don't. I might try
it. So I'm guessing you listen to like Godin and Gary Vee and like those people?
I don't listen to either of them. I'm on Godin's email list. I've never been a fan of the Gary Vee thing. I know.
Gary Vee I can take in small doses.
I didn't even know they had podcasts. Seth's podcast is really new, right?
Gary Vee started one called...
I'm not interested in him. Yeah.
Oh, Seth, I'm not sure. But the thing about Gary that the most is this thing that he talks about going all in on your strengths.
Mm-hmm.
Because for someone who's done like every seminar and every 12-step and let me fix, and be like, you know what? I'm a really bad manager. I'm not going to manage people.
Mm-hmm.
This is what I'm good at. And that's what got me to start a second podcast because mm-hmm. I'm like, what do I really like doing that I'm really good at? Mm-hmm. Fuck it. Let's
mm-hmm.
go.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So anyway, that's why I there's a few other things Gary likes that I really, but yeah, I can only take him in small doses.
Yeah. I don't know. I should check it out. I have my ones that I'm obsessed. I'm interested in podcasters who will teach me things I can implement. And Amy Porterfield is the very best at that.
What about Tim Ferriss?
His is not about implementation. His is interesting. But I have Tools of Titans right there, but I want practical strategies.
What he does. He's like, I'm gonna talk to all these people and take these things and give them to you.
But so Amy Porterfield and then this guy Pat Flynn, who's got a podcast called Smart Passive Income, and then a guy named there's Youpreneur with Chris Drucker. There's a bunch of them.
But tell me why you don't like Tim Ferriss for that, because I thought that is what he does. I haven't listened to him in a long time, but I thought that is what he does.
No, so Amy Porterfield will go, today's episode is about how to build your email list. And she will give you 10 strategies on how to do that.
So do you think I should be listening to that instead of, like, all the murder ones I listen to? Because, like, that's what I listen to these days.
Yeah, I try to get into the murder. Did you listen to the John Ronson porn one? God, that was so good. It's called The Butterfly Effect.
No, but have you listened to Dirty John?
No, I don't know what that is.
It's 5 episodes. It's the greatest thing. Don't Google anything about it. Don't give it away.
Okay.
It's only 5. It's seriously the greatest thing.
Okay.
And then text me when you're done.
I will.
Because you will binge. You will start the first one and then you won't be able to stop.
Yeah. I mean, I obviously did that with Serial and S-Town.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then Missing Richard Simmons. Did you see that?
I did. And then everybody was giving that guy shit.
Which, the podcaster?
Yeah.
For, like, hounding him?
Like, oh, it's in poor taste and blah, 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 and he's still alive and why are you doing this? And
I don't know. I liked it.
I think Dirty John is better than S-Town. Not better than the first season of Serial, because you can't get better than that.
You can't.
But yeah.
Okay, good. Dirty John.
Dirty John, for sure.
Yeah.
What other podcasts do people listen to that then you come up in other podcasts listen
oh,
to?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I have only noticed that sometimes. The sober ones, the recovery ones.
Right. So do you not want to be in that group? You said it a little.
I don't listen to any of them. So, it's interesting. Was I just telling you I hired a business coach? This girl was here right before and we were talking and we were sitting on this couch. So now I'm getting confused what I told her and what I told you. But I just hired a business coach. And what we've been talking about is something I've known for a while, which is I want to get out of just being that recover girl person. I think I'm a lot sick of talking about recovery and sobriety, and I think everybody is overcoming something, and so I want to be speaking more to other things. I keep getting pulled back in to the recovery thing, but I just changed the name of my podcast.
What was it before?
Recover Girl.
Right.
It was first After Party Pod, then Recover Girl, and that's Light Hustler.
Right. I think if I was, like, if you asked me, like, hey, you're an entrepreneur, what do you think? Like, obviously talk to your coach, but, like, I always talk to multiple people. I think you can absolutely keep that kind of, like, core, and if that's where you're showing up on Google and whatever, like, podcasts about recovery, like, absolutely keep those people. And then, you can grow. And then people that listen to you go, she used to be about this, but now, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's not impossible. It's not like shifting from, I can't even think
of what I did before, which is sex to recovery. That is what I did. That was what I was on TV talking about. And I was like, I don't want to do this anymore. And I switched it.
So because you were party girl, it was, they thought, let's get a woman on here.
What happened is right before, I think a year before I wrote Party Girl, I was working at Premiere, and Michael Solomon, who was the editor-in-chief, the guy who hired me, called me. Texting didn't exist yet. He called me and he said, a friend of mine named Amy Sohn is the sex columnist for New York Magazine. She is looking for a writer in LA who will trade lives with her for a week and write a story. She's got this idea, dating in New York versus LA. I thought of you, would you be interested? And I said, sure. I'd never done anything but celebrity journalism. And she sold that story to Playboy. And so suddenly I went to New York and I went on a bunch of dates and I wrote about it. Turned out I was good at that. And then Playboy ended up shooting us. I met the editor and he's like, wait, why don't we do a layout? So not naked, but like super sexy. And then that story was a super big deal. And it was optioned and made into a reality show pilot. And suddenly I had this bizarre career as a sex columnist.
I'm just like,
yeah, that's what I was doing back in the
day. I knew that that was, like, this is my weird memory of you.
Yeah.
Maybe it's not even you. Did you go on G4?
Yeah, I was on it for 3 years.
Right. So.
Yeah. I was the sex and dating expert.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So that's what I remember. That, like when I think of your name, that's kind of like, oh, yeah, she was like, that's kind of what you were. But it was funny because I was imagining when you said spread in Playboy or shoot whatever you just said, like a bunch of guys, like quickly thumbing thing, and then you're like, I wasn't naked, them going, oh, like stopping the thumbing
of
the search.
By the way, I was wearing a G-string and nothing else, but they don't, it was like...
Right, maybe now they'll go back to Googling it. Anyhow.
Yes, you can't Google Playboy, but they don't show it. Like because somehow Playboy is able to keep the, you can find outtakes that I've posted, but I was in it another time.
How did they get out of Google?
I have no idea.
Okay, that's another story for another time. But here's what's interesting about that. And this is probably why, like, you're not someone that I would call slutty.
Yeah.
Right? Like, there's women who dress a certain way, act a certain way, right? I mean, you're certainly, like I said, like an attractive person. I'm trying not to be super awkward
now.
Thank you. Right?
Yeah.
We've known each other a long time.
Yeah.
This is a safe space.
It's totally safe.
But yeah, so like... I think guys, me, like, oh, if somebody's writing about sex, then that they must be some, like,
you know what's
super
funny?
Slutty girl.
Do you know David D?
And again, you're not, like, a prude, but you're, like, a normal chick.
So David D, who just, I won't say his last name just in case that would bother him.
Can you tell me later? Because I don't know who that
is. Yes, and you do. I remember when we first became friends, he walked
in. Hang on. Is he from
where?
I was trying to, like, Miami?
No, calm down. I'll tell you after.
Because I think I know who you're talking about now. Deep voice.
He's not from Miami. You don't have to whisper it. Anyway.
Does he have a deep voice and tattoos?
No, neither. Oh, now I want to know who you mean. He walked into my apartment. I think, like, the previous one. He was like, oh, your bed is so small because it's a queen bed. And I'm like, what did you think? I host orgies here every night? Like, that's literally like what he thought.
Right, because you're writing about all this crazy stuff.
I was uncomfortable doing that job. I'm fine talking about sex, but I just felt like such a fraud because I didn't know very much. I'm learning now. I know the most about sex is what I'm learning.
Did you watch a lot of Sex and the City? Apparently they covered a lot of that.
Yes, I did watch a lot of that.
Okay.
Yeah, and that was like the whole thing, oh, you're like Carrie, you know?
Right, there you go.
Yeah.
Duh.
So...
Did you like that comparison or not like that comparison?
Of course I did. Yeah, I was a woman in the 2000s. Like, I was a 30-something, so I was obsessed with Sex and the City.
Okay.
Yeah.
What about the movies? Fan of the movies?
Not a fan of the movies. But the weird thing, too, about Sex and the City is that when I was coked up and, like, trying to write screenplays and TV specs... And they were all terrible and nobody liked them.
Right.
One day it occurred to me, instead of trying to write a Third Rock from the Sun spec, a show I had never seen, or King of the Hill, another show I had never seen, I was like, why don't I write a spec of a show I watch?
Right.
To like a coke-addled brain, that's a revelation.
Right.
So I sat down and I wrote a Sex and the City. And suddenly I showed it to people. It was people were like, this is so good. And I had UTA and what's that other agency? APA, like wooing me. And I got a bunch of TV meetings. So and then I never wrote another good TV thing again. I never got hired on a TV show. But
so let's back up. So yeah. You get, they option a reality show.
Yeah.
Around the
Playboy story.
They made
the pilot.
Was it you or somebody else?
Somebody else.
Somebody else gets to go around and date a bunch of guys.
Yeah.
So you were like, yeah, not me. Or they didn't want you for
they
that.
They didn't want me.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we cast it or whatever.
Right. That's interesting, though, because back then there wasn't even near as much reality TV, right? This is like early 2000s.
Do you want to know what else is really frustrating about that? It was the producers of Top Model, and they were great, and we had an office there and everything. And I said to the producer, he goes, do you have any reality show ideas? And I go, a dance show, because I'm a dancer. And he's like, no, Anna, nobody would want that. Cut to, is there a bigger market than Dancing with the Stars? So you think you can dance?
Do you watch Dancing with the Stars?
No.
Okay, I was going to say I just had breakfast with someone who's on that show, but if you don't watch it, it doesn't matter. Noah Galloway, the guy with one arm.
Oh, sounds amazing.
Very handsome.
Yeah.
He's hilarious because he's like a total redneck, but like is in this like the celeb world, and like he'll tell you stories. He's like, yeah, man, I was at this party. Here's Prince Harry. It's funny.
Right.
Anyhow.
I believe you.
Anyhow. Just making sure we're good on battery.
Yeah.
So are we doing on time?
Yeah, we're good.
So they do this. You shoot a pilot. It doesn't happen.
Yeah.
And then you're not like, oh, bummer. You're more like, okay, let's see what's next.
Yes. Because I was in that acceptance.
Right.
Totally. Do you know what I mean? I just kind of assumed great things would continue to happen, and they did. It was really weird. And I think I sold Party Girl, and I was like, yeah, whatever, to that pilot. It wasn't going to be a big life changer for me because it's not like I was in it. You don't get a ton of money when you're a producer because it was made out of your article and you're not on
right,
it. It's like,
right. You're not, your name doesn't mean enough yet that they're like, we need a big, right.
Yeah.
You're not Greg Barrett. Is he still around?
Not only is he still around, but he's a really good friend of mine who does my show. And the girl who was here before, we were talking about him because we met through him. Greg Barrett is amazing. And so, yeah, he had a thing. He had this moment.
Yeah.
And,
They gave him a crappy daytime talk show.
Exactly.
But, I mean, we should tell... So, tell everybody who he is, because we obviously don't want to talk about
him. He's one of the funniest people I've ever known, and he's a comedian. And he was a consultant on Sex and the City, and literally we just happened to be in the writer's room, and somebody was talking about something, and he goes, oh, he's just not that into you. And that became this episode, that became this iconic episode, that became this best-selling
into
book.
The zeitgeist. He's just not that into you.
Yeah, he invented that.
Because, like, you guys finally figured it out.
Except, I think I went through
something
phases
we've known
where
all
I was
along.
Like, I thought that was bullshit. But now I think I'm in a phase where I know it's not.
So,
yeah.
That if you say, do you want to do this? And he says, no, there's any other reason than he doesn't like you?
I can't remember.
I hate to make it that simple.
Yeah, I think that was before I met, like, I think that's when I was dating torturous, unavailable men.
Oh, okay.
Like, I'd be like, no,
right. He's got a really good excuse. Yeah. I'm sure he's going to leave his wife.
Yeah.
You weren't ever that bad, were you? It's okay. I'm not bad. I'm sorry. Sorry. It's horrible judgment saying.
Yeah. I was delusional about stuff.
Okay. It's okay. We all were, is.
Yeah.
Okay. So he, I assume, got a bunch of money for that, right? When they made a movie out of it? Did they make a movie out of it?
They made a movie out of
right,
it.
Right. So he got a bunch of money.
Yeah. But like, I don't want to speak for him. But yeah, it's not like that was all a great thing for him.
Right. And maybe one day I'll have him on the show. But in the meantime.
Should.
I'd have to, like, reintroduce myself. I mean, I knew him, too, from forever ago, but it's been a long time.
Yeah, he's the best guy ever.
Yeah?
Yeah, truly.
What the hell were we talking about?
I don't know. Sex and the City? Very early 2000s. We were definitely deep in that.
So if people were like, oh, she's like a real-life Carrie, and you were like, yeah, that's me.
Yeah, I thought that was cool.
You thought you were, like, a big deal, kind of, or no?
Complicated question. Truly. I don't know. I think I struggle, like all of us, with ego.
Correct.
So, in some ways, yeah, I think I did think that, you know? In some ways, I think that. In some ways, no, not at all.
If people want to, like obviously you talk about like writing a lot. So what do you tell young ladies that want to write? Because now we have this whole different world, right? You can start your own blog. You don't need some magazine to bless you. You can create all kinds of content, mm-hmm. right? So what do you tell people?
Well, it's changing. You know, my course is about teaching people how to write book proposals. So that's for people who want to publish traditionally, who have this dream of having their book come out from HarperCollins or whatever it is.
Right.
I think what I'm going to get more into now is teaching people how to build audiences so they can do
that's what, it's
what
about.
I'm doing. Yeah.
Right.
Sell whatever you want.
So that's what you think it's about. It's about building audience.
I think it is now. I think that Keith Kelly piece is everything. Kelly.
The Thousand True Fans?
Thousand True Fans, yeah.
Would you be surprised to know that I have a book?
I am surprised to know that. Tell me more.
So, and this is my entrepreneur journey.
Mm-hmm.
I started running these obstacle races like many people did in 2011, 2012.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't even tell you when the like light bulb went off, like you should do a podcast about this, but I just did.
Mm-hmm.
There was nobody doing one.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't like there were a lot. Like I listened to Marc Maron and listened to This American Life.
Mm-hmm.
And I just knew there was a thing called podcasting.
Mm-hmm.
And immediately I became you're the podcast guy.
Right.
You're the industry expert.
What year was this?
2012.
Right.
Yeah. I became the industry expert. And wouldn't you know, a year later, someone's like, do you want to write a book?
That's awesome.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, now I hardly even talk about it. I mean, I suppose I should.
Who published it?
We could go to Amazon and look.
Okay.
But they're real.
Real publisher.
They're here in Boston.
Yeah.
You said they're here in Boston. We're sitting in Los Angeles.
We are.
So
they're a Boston-based publisher.
They're a Boston-based publisher. Mm-hmm. I think Quarto, is that what?
Don't know anything.
But here's the deal, and we can talk specific dollars offline,
mm-hmm.
but I know that for someone that doesn't have anything, I think I got the most one person could get.
Why can't we talk about it now?
Like dollars? Well, you weren't talking about your dollars, so I didn't know we were
going. Oh, I'll talk about them.
Okay. So I was like, I should have called you. I called in my mind whoever I knew that had written a book.
Mm-hmm.
Like there was a girl I knew who wrote a hilarious book that was a bestseller, and I talked to a couple other people, and I said, what do they give people who've never written a book? They're like, they'll give you $5,000. So if you can get more than that.
This was 2013?
Yes. If you can get more than that, great. So they sent me a proposal, and it said $5,000.
Mm-hmm.
$2,000 for photos.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if obstacle racing has one thing,
photos.
It's a shitload of photos.
Yeah.
I go, you guys, I'll get the photos, right? Mm-hmm. Why don't you give me that extra $2,000?
Mm-hmm.
So I got $7,000,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, it was over the course of like 6 months, it wasn't life-changing money,
mm-hmm.
but it's pretty cool. And then mm-hmm. to your listeners, and as you already know, there's like, okay, after you sell 10,000, you'll get X percent.
Did you sell more than 10,000 copies?
Of course I did not sell more than 10,000 copies.
I'm so impressed.
Of course I didn't. But that's what I'm saying is that, so what book selling becomes, which I didn't know, is it's what it, but you, I should ask you about this, is that it becomes the back of the room thing. They'll sell the books to you for $10. You can sell them for $20. P.S. by the way, all those books you buy for $10 do not count against the 10,000.
Right.
So many people that you see speak at conferences, they got that giant box of books.
Yeah.
And they've spent 10 bucks on them, and they're going everywhere they go, they sell 10 more, and they sell. To me, it's just, who wants to carry around the books?
Like, yeah.
I don't hawk them
really
at all.
That.
I never mention them.
Yeah.
But I'm not a writer. Like, you're an actual writer.
But I don't do that either. I mean...
Oh, here's what a guy told me, though. Noah, who I just spoke with, because I talked about that. He goes, no, if I'm going to speak like at a company, I get them to buy it.
Yeah.
And then I'll sign them all.
Yeah.
Hey, you want to buy 200 for your company?
You're a big baller. Yeah. I've never been in that situation,
Okay.
Yeah. That's ideal.
Right?
Yeah. I mean, so...
By the way, would you agree or disagree with the getting the $7,000 up front was pretty good for someone who's never written anything?
I don't know.
I'm assuming you got considerably more because you already were a columnist.
Things changed so much between my first book deal was in 2004. That's a long time.
So you got a lot of money.
It was much better then. It was, okay, I'll be honest.
Lay it on me.
It'll make you feel good.
Okay.
My book deals went from, for Party Girl, I was offered $50,000. I was super sad. I thought that was, I wanted like 200. Like that was my expectation. My final book, I was paid $2,000.
So I beat you.
you could say you beat me, except I got $50,000 for my first book. So that's a very creative interpretation.
So, but when you got 50, let's break this down.
Yeah.
You're how old that year that you got 50?
We don't need to get into that. I don't know. I was in
single
my early...
and relatively not that old. So like that 50 can go a long way. It's like people that book commercials, right? Like people don't know. People outside of LA don't know.
50 and 15 probably went to taxes. 15 went to my agent. It's not much money in the end if that's what all you're doing. It wasn't.
Okay, good point.
There are much easier ways to make money. You know, and I always tell people, you will never make money as a writer.
Right.
But you can make money as a result of being a writer.
Right. It's a brand builder. That's what I tell everybody all the time. And again, it just becomes like a link in the chain. So like now I wrote a book. I've been on these shows. I've done this. There's a documentary about OCR. I'm in that. Like, you know, it's
You can come on my podcast now.
I would love to come on your podcast.
Yeah. We do it over Facebook Live, so you don't even need to be here.
Talk about light hustling.
Yeah, and recovery, but not too much about recovery because I'm trying to get out of talking about that so much.
Right, because you can have light and be a light hustler.
Yeah.
Although I feel like you're pigeoning yourself again.
Uh-huh.
Because that word hustler is so very now. And like
there's that.
In a few years, it might not be a cool word anymore.
So true. There was this, I met this is like not a name drop. I was like speaking at this thing last fall, and this guy Naveen Jain, who's this, he's literally a billionaire, he started all these companies, and we were talking about it, and he said, that's a terrible name, and I just started it, and he said, you should call it Light Igniter. And I went back and I obsessed over it, and I asked my boyfriend, and I had an intern, and I was like asking everyone, and everyone was like, no, stick with Light Hustler. And I remember, I don't know if you remember Darren. He's so awesome. He's someone I knew in early sobriety, and I hadn't seen him in so
little
long.
Darren.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Hadn't seen him in so long. He now has like face tattoos and looks terrifying. So
did he go back out?
Yeah. But he's back. It's fine.
Are you kidding
me?
Little adorable Darren got face tattoos.
Are we talking about he already had a big bomb tattoo on his neck?
No,
different guy. Okay.
Different guy.
And
clearly Darren's and David's, we haven't.
We haven't figured that part out. Oh, and they're like best friends, those two, Darren and David, the two I'm thinking. So we were in the same shared office space, but I thought he was like a terrifying person. And then one day I went over to the terrifying person. I was like, hey, can I borrow your charger? And he goes, you know, we totally know each other. Anyway, he's the funniest person ever. And I asked him, and he said, your target audience, you're online the way we all are now. Your target audience is always going to be young. So that's who your target.
So hustler's a good word for them.
Light igniter is not. He's like, that's good if you're
igniter,
in your 40s.
Igniter doesn't even come off the tongue well.
No, it's terrible.
Right?
Yeah.
It just doesn't even... I mean, listen, he's got an opinion. He's a billionaire. Who cares?
Right, exactly.
I'm sure Elon Musk and, you know, what's his name? I was going to say Steve Jobs, but he's dead. But the other guy,
Jeff
Bill
Bezos,
Gates.
Yeah.
I'm sure they all have hundreds of horrible ideas, too.
Yeah.
I mean, again, I'm not saying it's bad. Just that kind of made me think, like, that is a very now-ish...
Don't have a new company.
By the way, can you like push your call? I feel like this is going quite well.
It is, but we could work towards wrapping up. just because I have to
totally,
do this thing at 3:15.
I totally did not take that personally. Except that it's a thing you could easily push, but that's fine.
Fine,
we can go straight to you telling people where to find you online.
Okay. They can find me at lighthustler.com. Go there quickly because the word is going out of date, so who knows how long the company will last.
Right.
Honestly, I'd love to have a bunch of different things. Why not? Anyway, sorry. Go find me, lighthustler.com. On social media, I'm at Anna B. David on Instagram and Facebook.
Do you know that I'm at B. Davis on all platforms?
This is getting super weird.
Right?
People go like, like N. B. Davis?
They often do that.
Yeah.
And they always ask me what the B stands for. But now it's become like this fun thing that it's kind of like a trade secret. I'm not going to tell you.
Why? I'll tell you.
I'll tell you when we turn this off.
You don't want your listeners to know what the B stands for?
I'm telling you, it's part of my thing.
Oh, it's like, you think it makes you mysterious?
People ask, I'm telling you, it's become a thing. It's just, it's stupid, but it's a thing.
Okay, I'm pleading. my B stands for Benjamin. It's my middle name.
You have a man's middle name.
Yeah. We've already discussed my family, so God knows.
Right.
But it was, you know, it's like a Jewish tradition, the most recent person to die.
Right.
It was like, I had a relative named Ann Benjamin.
But usually you just do the initial. Like, the B could be a female name because it's the initial of the dead person.
I never knew that.
That's what many do. Also, comes back to the beginning where I said Lily, and you said, of course it's a girl. So that whole Benjamin thing.
I know, but that's an insane thing. Lily? Like...
Anna, I can't tell you how much I've enjoyed this time today.
Are you being facetious?
Please find her books wherever books are sold.
Yeah, so...
And her TEDx talk are in what cities? Where can they see you?
I'm going to do one in at Ohlone College in Newark. I'm doing one at San Diego State or University of San Diego. Clearly, I don't know. It's all on my website. Everything is on my website. You can go to lighthustler.com. There's like /events. And then I have a monthly storytelling show here in Los Angeles.
Oh, I was going to ask you about that. I remember I saw that.
Yeah, it's really funny. And I broadcast that live on Facebook. So it's really funny. So if you go to, you know what? I should also get my podcast, which is called Light Hustler 2. I have storytelling episodes and I have Facebook Live interviews I do.
Do you ever mess around like Instagram Live or Snap?
I do. I don't do Snapchat, but I do... I will do Instagram stories and I do a Facebook Live every week.
I love Instagram stories. I have a lot of fun with those.
Those are fun.
I don't think I'm following you. I should start following you.
I don't think I follow you either. We should remedy that right now.
All right.
Okay, super fun. Thank you so much.
Told you it wasn't going to be boring.
It wasn't. You're great at this. I get why you love it so much.
There you go, folks. There it was, my chat with Anna. More episodes coming your way. If I don't see you again through your ears this week, which I plan to, but in case I don't, I am running the Publix Marathon. So anybody else out there running the Publix or the half, shoot me a note and say yay, because you probably won't recognize me. If you recognize me, it's because you already know me. Anyhow, have a great weekend, everybody. Love you, Lisha, mean it. I gotta run.